This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to all elite wrestling and the elite extended universe. I'm AB. I'm back, just like pro wrestling. And I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. What's up, Nate?
Hello, AB. Welcome back. And welcome back to pro wrestling, which is not only back on American soil, it's back on Earth soil. It's back on Terra, the third planet from the sun. It's back. Wrestling's good again.
Were you a third rock from the sun viewer?
I certainly have seen a good amount of Third Rock from the Sun episodes, but on syndication, you know, when they do reruns at fucking 11:30 on a Saturday or whatever. Certainly was never a primetime Third Rock viewer.
I frankly don't even know the conceit of the show, although I have, I think, you know, over time seen a few episodes.
It's aliens. The family's aliens.
Huh. Yeah.
What do you know?
You know Mork and Mindy? It's that, but
yeah,
with French Stewart.
Now that I've seen a lot of.
And John Lithgow. Mindy. John Lithgow, really pretty impressive post-Third Rock career for John Lithgow.
John Lithgow is cool. I met him after he was on
a
Broadway.
A Weird Al concert. Oh.
No. He was on Broadway in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Hmm.
And
how was that?
Well, it was excellent. But I went to New York and I bought tickets to see the show because I was a big fan of a guy called Norbert Leo Butts.
Oh, sure. Leo Butts was in Steve Carell movie where he's dating a woman.
Yeah.
Oh, what's this movie?
Dan in Real Life.
Yes, he was in that.
Yeah, well, he had a very weird Broadway career before that, and he ended up being kind of a big deal. Anyway, I specifically bought tickets to the show to see Norbert Leo Butts. We arrived at the theater, and they gave us a little card saying, of course, he would not be playing that night. But we met John Lithgow afterwards, and he was like, not being an asshole, but he was just kind of like signing things for people. Like, okay. Somebody would like make some comment to him, and he'd be like, as he would like sign his name. And I said something about like, oh, what a bummer. No Norbert tonight. And he stopped what he was doing, looked me dead in the eye, and said, he is special, isn't he?
Oh, wow. Okay. Mike will introduce you in a minute. I have to know more about your Norbert Leo Butts fandom. I have to dig in on this. Why? I mean, how is he special? What was he in? What brought you to the Norbert Leo Butts universe?
Okay, I think I'm excited about how interested you are in this
thing. what a pull. I didn't know that he was a guy. You know, this is like when people will say things like, oh, and we all know that for a period there, Tajiri was the best wrestler in the world. I'm like, I didn't know that. That's news to me. Well, you know, I always knew that he was good and that he had, you know, ECW runs and stuff. But this is out of left field for me that there was ever a Norbert Leo Butts era on Broadway.
Okay, Norbert Leo Butts was a huge deal on Broadway for a time. I think it starts, and, you know, it's been a while for me, for my the Norbert Leo Butts era, but I think it all starts with The Last 5 Years. Are you familiar with the musical The Last 5 Years?
I'm not. Mike, are you familiar with The Last 5 Years?
No, but I am familiar very intimately with the first role that Norbert Leo Butts had on Broadway, which was the understudy to Adam Pascal playing Roger in Rent.
Yes, so he famously moves to New York. His very first audition is for Rent, and he gets cast as Adam Pascal's understudy, and his career goes off from there. But Last 5 Years is like this. God, I'm so sorry to everyone. If you're like a theater geek of a certain age, you love The Last 5 Years. It was very popular on like every college campus among theater kids. It's Jason Robert Brown wrote it. It's two people, their relationship. Norbert Leo Butz starts at his song start at the beginning of the relationship, and Sherry Renee Scott, who played the wife, her song start at the end of the relationship, and then they meet in the middle as it goes through. Anyway, he was a big deal coming out of that, but mostly to, like, you know, a certain type of people. But then he ended up doing Wicked. He was in the original cast of Wicked.
Okay, that's a this is a disappointing turn that it's gone already to this mainstream touchstone in American theater.
That was huge for him, though. You know, he got a starring role in that show,
absolutely,
which I went to see. And
with Kristen Chenoweth?
Yes, I saw the original cast of Wicked. Then he got Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which was big, and they got the big spot on the Tonys, where he and John Lithgow did a song on the Tonys. That was big. He did Speed the Plow, the revival on Broadway. That was big for him. But then, yeah, he started transitioning into film and television, and it never really worked, I don't think.
I don't know that it ever really does for big Broadway stars, right?
Well, you got your Idina Menzel. I think she's done pretty well for herself.
That Rent cast, pretty much.
She did a song.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
she's pretty famous, I think, Idina Menzel.
Yeah, I do think she is famous. But in kind of a different way, I don't know. She, you know, she's famous in like, she's going to perform on the Oscars and sing a song.
Right. But she never did like a big movie or anything like
that.
Yeah,
she doesn't get like roles. Yeah.
No. But yeah, Kristen Chenoweth, another one who I think is like famous. Probably not as famous as Idina Menzel, but famous. So yeah, no, it doesn't usually work.
I think Kristen Chenoweth was more famous than Idina Menzel is now. Because she was on like the West Wing, and West Wing was like,
that's true.
Know, 16 million viewers, some shit.
That's
Nate,
true.
You're going to get the Wicked like tryhards and then like all the Frozen people in our mentions about this.
I am not afraid of theater kids. There are factions online that might put the fear of God in me, but theater kids are not one of them.
What about?
I will take on all theater kids.
I'm trying to think.
No offense to Aaron.
That's okay. I'm a reformed theater kid. But shockingly to no one, I got very, you know, I can't just like be a fan of something or someone. I have to be like insanely into it. And I like collected playbills from like every show he was ever in, even off Broadway. Just fucking a nerd. I've been a nerd my whole life. I still am.
Mike, what have you seen on Broadway?
Never. Nothing on Broadway.
Oh no.
Up until a WrestleMania weekend in 2019, other than being in the airport, I never stepped foot into New York City.
I see.
Just never had the desire. Just, you know.
Sure. Well, the media really paints a picture of New York City. I think I've seen. I saw original cast of The Book of Mormon. We might have lost Bentley. I'm not sure.
I'm here.
Okay, no, Aaron was rolling his eyes at my just apprehension and for being a theater kid and having not a love of Broadway whatsoever.
No, I wasn't. I was just trying to read the YouTube chat, so I may have. I didn't intend to roll my eyes.
You've come unstuck in time because you are now moving.
I would like to say that if we're going to talk about like how Amber Murder Brian made the joke about everything evolves being the Velvet Underground of like Evolve podcast, that original Rink cast, like a lot of big hitters came out of that Rink cast. I mean, Tay Diggs was a part of it as well. I mean,
person. I'm glad. I have to say, Drew did a tweet a while ago, your brother Drew Spears, about like Rent being like the most significant work of American art in like the Generation X era or something. And I thought it's one of the most insane takes I've ever seen in my life. I mean, so few people comparatively have seen it. I mean, sure, it's influential. Velvet Underground, probably a better metaphor. But in terms of like, you know, impact, just minute compared to something bad like Friends. But I didn't know Tay Diggs was in it. So there you go.
like it, coming from like a Spears frame of conscious, we had a babysitter who was a theater geek, and she would have the original cast recording of Rent that played nonstop in her car. So it has imprinted on us in certain ways. Like that's why I knew exactly who Aaron was talking about when he brought up Norbert Leo Butz. Hi, everyone, by the way. I'm Mike.
Hey, Mike. Norbert Leo Butz, also a short king, so another reason, you know, to support him. For a guy who's lived in Kentucky most of my life, I've seen quite a few shows on Broadway.
I saw the previously mentioned Book of Mormon with the original cast. My parent went to that with my parents, which was a choice, and really sparked some enriching and stimulating conversations with them, because they are, or at least my father is, considerably more religious than I am. And I saw Kelsey Grammer in The Birdcage, which was pretty funny.
Let's see. I saw Alan Alda in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, very nice.
He was excellent in that. I saw Next to Normal. I don't know if any of this stuff like reaches out to like the
that
mainstream
name
at all.
Brings familiar to me.
Yeah, I saw
Next
that original cast.
Is that Jonathan Larson?
No.
No.
No. That's Jonathan Larson is Rent.
Yeah, but he wrote other musicals.
He did, but nothing that was good.
Heavy shot at Tick Tick Boom.
Yeah, it's not very good. I saw I was just talking about this with Sarah the other day. I saw Assassins, the revival of Assassins that had
not familiar.
Okay, well, it's a musical about presidential assassins.
Stephen Sondheim. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay.
It's a I've Sondheim. Heard of him. My mother and I were in New York, and I wanted to see Caroline or Change, and she thought it sounded overwrought. So we compromised on Assassins, about presidential assassins, in Studio 54, which pretty fun. Neil Patrick Harris was the
John Wilkes Booth.
Well, he was John Wilkes Booth, but he's not. You don't know that at the beginning. You don't know that until the end of the play that he's also John Wilkes Booth.
Sorry for the assassin spoilers, everyone.
Sorry, everyone. But it also had, what's that guy's name? Michael Cerveris. He's not John Wilkes Booth. He's Lee Harvey Oswald. Michael Cerveris is John Wilkes Booth. Anyway, there's a lot of ties between Assassins and Titanic. If anybody wants to talk about that later, we can get into that.
Like the James Cameron or the musical. I know there was a musical Titanic. Also.
Both.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
A lot of ties between.
Maybe we'll save that for the Patreon. We'll kick it to the wolves.
Yeah. So I think that covers most of the funny things I've seen on Broadway. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, no Norbert Leo Butz, John Lithgow, and I had an interaction. That was Third Rock from the Sun.
Just going to rewind it back to the beginning of the show here.
We're also joined by Mike. What's up, Mike?
Hi.
Mike, did the theater ever come to the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area? Did you have a Broadway in Dallas branch?
Hey, Fort Worth was at one point the 19th most populated city in the country. The Broadway came to us, and then they also stopped in Dallas because, you know, bigger city. But yeah, I was like the odd like theater kid that like I was more interested in tech theater, but they wouldn't let underclassmen into tech theater. They didn't want us around power tools, which knowing me, right call. So I ended up being in theater, but like I would never. Like the only time I would go to plays was when I had to go to for class, to be quite honest. I was more interested with like lighting setups and stuff like that.
It computes.
Absolutely.
Right. Cause he had a fear of music. If you recall that he was afraid of music for a long time.
It was not a fear of music. It just was not a part of my life.
I think we could probably find the tape. You probably joked and said afraid of music at some time because that is how I internalized it.
They should do.
I mean, that is certainly the right way to interpret it. I mean, to be fair,
there should be a musical to the music of AC/DC, without a doubt.
There should be.
There probably is one.
Yeah, no. Fuck, jukebox musicals are trash. I'm against jukebox musicals.
They are bad.
With one exception, They should do a musical based on the music of Mikey Ruckus, beginning with the Adam Cole theme. It's all about the boom.
If you want to hear more of our takes on musical theater, you can follow us on Twitter at everything AEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Search Everything Elite on the podcast app of your choice. Hit subscribe. It helps you. It helps us. It helps everybody. If you use the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and review. It is similarly helpful to us. And if you want to be extremely super duper helpful, head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. And subscribe. But now we will kick off the show with Elite or Delete, the famous part of the show where we talk about the things we thought were good and were bad from the show. Nate, kick it off with you. What was your favorite thing, your Elite pick from this episode?
So, pretty tremendous episode, I thought. Just super live, very hot episode of wrestling television. I'm going to give it here to the segment that most exceeded my expectations, which is often sort of the thing that I'm most delightfully surprised by, is often the thing that I remember the most. Dan Lambert flies up to New Jersey with a plane full of his shooters, goes to meet his friends, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky, assembles all these people in the ring. They've been doing this angle, of course, where Dan Lambert cuts these interminable promos where he's doing Jim Cornette. He's doing, you know, bad faith criticisms of AEW and, you know, going on and on about how they're ruining wrestling and the guys are short and they're doing flips and the crowd is bad because the crowd's enjoying it. The biggest swerve possible, out comes to defend the honor of the millennial AEW fans. The honor of the wrestling fans who don't believe in cancel culture. Probably the two most woke people on the roster, Chris Jericho and Jake Hager, to a huge reaction. And then Chris Jericho, I think, cuts maybe the best, like, old school Chris Jericho babyface promo, where it's like, I'm Chris Jericho and I'm going to make fun of you on the mic and do funny, you know, Y2J or funny Lionheart gimmicks at your expense. Probably the best one he's cut in AEW to this point. It absolutely kills with the crowd. Crowd's going fucking apeshit for it. I don't really understand if you're if you're Kayla Harrison or one of these other shoot fighters, why you come on Dan Lambert's jet to AEW to stand around in a ring and get made fun of. But I was just endlessly amused by it. It really had, you know, AEW is the WCW, is the WCW revival promotion. It's bringing back that WCW Monday Nitro feeling. But really, this was like a fucking Attitude Era segment. So it's not merely that Tony Khan has brought back WCW. He's really brought back the golden era of the Monday Night Wars, because this was just the exact pinpoint feeling of anything can happen in this wrestling promotion. You've got guys doing classic wrestling digs on the microphone and the crowd losing their shit for it. And it's setting up to a very funny tag match. And Chris Jericho and Jake Hager versus the Men of the Year at Arthur Ashe Stadium. So this amused me to no end. This was my wrestling is back moment of the night.
It just was such a electric kind of energy that just was not happening with Lambert's stuff before. Like I've said that Lambert, it's not the fact that he's here doing this. It's just the fact that the stuff that was trying to be like the Jim Cornette analog just was not working the content wise. With Chris Jericho, weirdly, able to override that. They didn't do as much of like the cancel culture lines. Just don't do that. And instead, this was vibrant. It was exciting. Kayla Harrison was just mean mugging and trash talking Chris Jericho, responding in her own kind the entire time. And yeah, I think this has to end with Chris Jericho debuting for Bellator. And Jake Hager now winning every single match with the Hager effect. It was just like exactly what you needed to do with this kind of act with Lambert and Man of the Year, to like have someone that is energetic enough. And Jericho, for as much as we say and grow tired of him, he has the connection to make it work. And it just was pro wrestling was back. I mean, pro wrestling was back a lot tonight in a lot of ways.
I agree that this was good. I liked it a lot. It made me smile and laugh, and I think that's primarily the point of professional wrestling. So I enjoyed it from that perspective. I also appreciate that we have Jericho and MJF being reset into new things where they aren't connected with each other anymore. These two things make sense. It's not like they just stopped caring about the Jericho MJF thing. We got kind of not really a resolution to that, I don't think, but we got a good stopping point in the story where we can move on to something else where both of them are going to pick up, I would assume, easy wins and keep building their own relative momentum so that they can meet back up somewhere down the road. So everything about that, I think, is good. Jericho, even though he had those first couple of really good matches in the Labors of Jericho, he started to kind of feel again of like, okay, maybe they've run out time on Jericho again. And now he's like, oh, nope, I got this thing. This is exciting, right? This is fun. So we get a little fresh injection into Chris Jericho, not unlike the Botox he gets weekly that helped out.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, he's doing his pro wrestling shtick in there where, you know, they write these roast insults for each other and come out and do it, and the crowd goes apeshit. But it also, you know, I was being ironic, saying, oh, you know, these the woke millennials are here to defend AEW against the bad faith Jim Cornette analog. But it actually does make sense. Like, Chris Jericho is the guy who was like, no, you know, I'm going to go to, it seems like something happened in New Japan. I'm going to go see what's happening in New Japan and wrestle Kenny Omega and see what that's all about. You know, he was the guy who left WCW and jumped to WWF at like a key time in that Monday Night Wars. So it does fit for Chris Jericho that he'd be like, no, you know what? I'm actually current with wrestling. I actually acknowledge what's good about wrestling. I, you know, didn't understand Orange Cassidy. I'm going to make an effort to learn to understand Orange Cassidy, and then I'm going to do the Orange Cassidy match and program, and everybody's going to want to do the Mimosa Mayhem match after me. So it, you know, totally fits for the character too.
The other thing that I was thinking about that is, how did we all not see Jake Hager being the foil for Dan Lambert? Like, that makes all the sense in the world, right?
He just doesn't matter.
I think of him as like a fake Bellator fighter. Like, you know, they put him in there with cans, he knees him in the balls, and then that's, you know, he's just doing pro wrestling. So did not really cross my mind. You know, Dana White is not with his UFC guys anywhere near Jake Hager. He absolutely not. I'm surprised that, you know, Dana lets them have his fighters in the ring wearing UFC shirts to the degree that he does. But it's maybe the best thing Dana White's ever done, just for the amusement factor.
Hey, these rich people stick together, man.
Well, I don't think he would do it for Vince. I don't know.
Yeah, but AEW is cool. WWE is not.
Tony does consider Dana, of course, to be a good friend. Very good.
A very, very close friend. All right, Mike, what was your Elite pick? What's your favorite thing from the show tonight?
Yeah, there's a lot on this show that kept me entertained on a episode that really was a plate spinning episode. This was really getting everything ready for next week with 4 hours from Arthur Ashe Stadium between this and Rampage. But I have to say, I was pretty cold about this match being revisited so soon, but I thoroughly enjoyed, and this is my own like brain worms here, the Malakai Black, Cody Rhodes, Rosario Dawson segment was just insane. Like, just like the idea that Malakai Black is cutting a promo and is distracted by Hollywood star Rosario Dawson in the front row wearing a Nightmare Family jacket. And then that's solely a distraction so Cody and Malakai Black can go and now brawl around the arena up the stairs, just completely self-indulgent stuff, but it worked. The crowd was going for this stuff. Like, it was awesome. And it was like a thing that now kind of has me back in on this feud that, like, I've thoroughly enjoyed Malakai Black as soon as we haven't had like dead horse promos. But I was a little bit wary about them going back to like this playbook that they are running back the Brody Lee stuff in a lot of way. I was kind of hesitant about them doing the part where Cody gets his win back so soon, but I feel like they did an excellent job providing a lot of spice to this feud that kind of has been done by proxies since Cody lost that first match.
Yeah, I'm still going to be annoyed if this feud just culminates with, oh, Cody comes back and he beats him and hooray, he's the babyface, whatever. That's still going to be annoying to me, but this segment on this show tickled me to no end. I think what really made this land for me is, maybe I missed it, I don't think that I did, because I think I was watching the show, you know, pretty attentively to this point. They never established Rosario Dawson in the crowd before this segment, right? So you Malakai Black comes out and not announced or anything. It's just all of a sudden blackout. Malakai Black does long overindulgent entrance. And then it's like, oh, we have an enemy in our midst. And then all of a fucking sudden it's Rosario Dawson wearing a Nightmare Family jacket and ringside. That just put it way over the top for me. Like, oh, this is just the super bizarre wrestling thing where all of a sudden Hollywood actor Rosario Dawson is here. And we're supposed to believe that not only is she like a friend, she's not only a work friend of Cody Rhodes, she's like in the Cody Rhodes family now. And to the degree that Malakai Black needs to kick her head off like he's kicked everyone else's heads off. So that was great to me. After that, it was all gold. Cody, you know, just sparing no effort for himself or expense for himself or sparing no amount of spotlight for himself, making the long entrance all the way down the ramp on the outside for no reason, or down the steps on the outside for no reason, and then brawling all the way back up those steps. Also very funny. So yes, you know, they've pretty much turned this feud around for me after I was initially also wary of Malakai Black, but he's been presented super well. And this was just such a curveball that I couldn't help but be delighted by it.
I came out completely on the other side of this segment. And this, I guess I still make it. This was going to be my delete, and I'll stick with it as my delete, because they've got this weird thing where Malakai Black is super over with the crowd. The crowd loves Malakai Black. They went insane for his entrance. And when he first started talking, they were going crazy. And I don't know, I disagree with you on this, Mike. I didn't feel like the crowd reacted all that strongly to Cody.
Really?
Or
the crowd
to
was going
this,
nuts.
I did not hear that.
I think the crowd was confused. They got into it once they started brawling, and you know, there was AEW chants and stuff that I think,
yeah, the cool
showed
part.
They were pretty well with it. But yes, I don't think he got like he didn't get an Adam Cole pop on this show. No,
not, nobody did. Adam Cole had the most insane pop that we heard all night. Yeah. So I just think, and this is an ongoing issue that I think about, and I don't think anyone else thinks about or cares about, but I do. And this is a podcast that I'm on, so unfortunately you have to listen to me talk about it every week. But they're in this weird situation where Malakai Black, I think, might be more over than Cody Rhodes is right now in this promotion. And so that creates an issue. And I'm with Nate, and I think Mike, you said this too. If Cody wins, if he beats Malakai Black on Dynamite, that's a huge mistake. Like, Cody is made, obviously, in this promotion forever. Malakai Black, I would not, and I'm not sure you can turn the fans off in this promotion. I think you have to do a lot of damage to turn the fans off on someone, but I wouldn't even risk it. I would just ride this Malakai Black wave to superstardom.
Yeah, I think that's the move. I hope they do it. And, you know, I guess with Cody, do you like, oh, you know, he couldn't come back and win the war, but you know, he re-sparked his love for pro wrestling or whatever. Excalibur had some line about Malakai Black has got Cody's heart back in the game. So maybe he can do that in a losing effort and still, you know, recover his boot from Malakai Black and walk off with his pride intact. Maybe that's what you can do. But yeah, it would be, I think, putting a little bit of an artificial limit on Malakai Black right now to have him lose to Cody just because Cody's Cody.
On a huge show, nonetheless. Or no less, I think, is really the phrase I want here. Not sure. Nonetheless, really doesn't make sense. Okay, I think that makes it my turn. Let's see. People would expect me to talk about Darby. I'm going to go with this other thing. I'll talk about Darby later because people wouldn't expect me to like this. But I'm really turning around. Go ahead, Nate. I see that you want to interject here.
I was just going to say, very motivated by what other people's expectations of you are.
I like to surprise our fans, you know. I like to come at them in a way they're not expecting. But it kind of goes in line with what I was saying about Jericho and MJF and the way they've reset them smartly. I really like the way that Bryan Danielson has come into the promotion. He's aligned himself with Christian and Jurassic Express. Then you have Adam Cole come into the company, align himself with the Elite. And we have all these people feuding in different ways, but it doesn't feel forced at all. The Adam Cole thing with Christian and Jurassic Express, that feels natural. Like, that all makes sense to me. It feels like a good starting point for Adam Cole. And the thing with Bryan Danielson and Omega also doesn't feel forced. It feels natural and a good starting point for Danielson in the promotion. So I just really, I'm like really enjoying the energy that the promotion has right now of not everything is resetting, but there is enough new stuff going on to mix in with some of the stuff that is ongoing that it just has a great vibe for me in the promotion. It's not exhausting to watch the show because I'm watching a lot of the same things that have been going on for a long time. They brought in new people and they use them to not just have that initial reinvigoration, but it's continuing to last for, you know, what are we? I'm not sure how far we are out from All Out. Not that far,
like,
I guess.
Yeah, like second week
days.
Or something.
10 days.
Yeah, but you can, you know, it's possible to dilute that very quickly. And they haven't, and they've set up long-term things. So I think all that's good.
Yeah, I like that, you know, guys can have different feuds or relationships or programs that are kind of coexisting or, you know, just a little more dynamic. You know, WWE would always do their programs where it's like, this guy, fucking Constable Corbin, is working the Archer of Infamy, Damian, shit, what's his last name?
Damian Priest.
Priest.
Damian Priest, Punishment Martinez.
Yes.
I was going to say Priestley, you know, B. Priestley's brother, Damian.
Sure. Son of Jason Priestley.
Right.
Those two guys would just wrestle each other for 3 weeks straight and then wrestle each other the pay-per-view or whatever. And it's like, okay, they're vacuum sealed in their little feud and they only interact with each other in each other's segments. So it's like, if one guy's coming out doing a promo, then you know the other guy's coming out, and that's just how it's going to be until the pay-per-view. And that, just the artificial feeling of that drove me insane and just made all their shows very predictable. So that you can have, now, you know, Eddie has his thing with Miro, where Eddie and Miro are, like, in a feud over the TNT title. Miro's also got this thing in the background with Fuego del Sol. But Eddie also has this thing with 2.0, and Daniel Garcia, who are, you know, going after the biggest dogs in the yard or whatever metaphor Excalibur used to try and make themselves known and attacking Moxley and Kingston. And they're also mad. Daniel Garcia is also mad about the Suzuki incident. So he's going after Moxley for that. And they also have previous beef with Sting and Darby. And just that all these things can kind of coexist. And then you can do one match on one thing 1 week. And then to keep it fresh, you do another match related to the other thing the other week. And it, yeah, just makes for a more lively seeming promotion where everything's not super predictable and you can kind of pay things off when it's important. And as if one thing or another is not working, then you just kind of let it fade into the background. I do still get kind of WWE brained about it where I'm like, well, I want a nice clean ending to this. I want like a real fine point on the end of this feud. So I know it's done, or I know, you know, this drop thing is finished. But, you know, hopefully after continuing to watch, that'll become less of an issue, or they'll find a way to put those nice clean breaks on it or something. But yeah, I'm totally with you that it feels right now, there's always the excitement of, oh, what, who's going to be involved with who, that, exactly like the the Dan Lambert thing. I never in a million years expect that Jericho and Hager were going to come out. So it's just like such a pleasant surprise when that segment happens and it's not, you know, the men of the year and somebody less interesting, I suppose.
but even if you compare it to like the Inner Circle Pinnacle feud, where that felt really like forced. It's like, oh, well, these guys have to feud with these guys because that's the people that are left in this in these units. So this feels much more organic.
Yeah, and it's something they can compare that with how the Dark Order is doing this needless turmoil storyline, whereas other people feel like they have agency. I think that's like the key term here, is that we're seeing people like be multidimensional and have agency. So it's not just like, as you mentioned, Eddie, Nate, like you are able to go after certain things and you don't forget like, oh, I was in this huge feud with you. Now things are okay. You don't exist to me anymore. Like things are ongoing.
Yeah, I mean, the Dark Order thing, I have my own issues with it, but they do, you know, at least we have agency for those characters that they all have their different motivations. Like they have clear battle lines. Like, no, we don't, we're mad about this reason. Alex Reynolds is mad about this and that. And Anna Jay wants everybody to get along. So, you know, we see them making those decisions. But yeah, it kind of comes across like a lot of their sort of stable break apart storylines that I've talked about a million times.
Our listener Elite comes from our listener Shortshine. If you want to be featured in Elite or Delete, all you got to do is sign up on the Patreon, join the Discord. If you're already a patron, join the Discord. We have an Elite or Delete channel that we monitor during the show. Shortshine this week says, Elite, Hook Ascendance.
Well,
they can be... Go ahead, Nate.
Hook, they are leaning on this idea of putting CM Punk and Hook in the same camera shot for sure. And of course, they did a match graphic for the Hobbs versus CM Punk match Hook is in wrestling gear, which is really just boxing shorts, which I think is a great look. Boxing shorts always look great, and nobody really doing them in wrestling that I can think of. So I you know, now we know that he owns gear. We didn't know that before. So maybe he's going to fight somebody.
Hook, I would say, very well manicured. And today's episode is sponsored by our friends at Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist manicuring or grooming, as they like to say. It's back to school time. I think everybody knows that. A lot of people are back in school. And you got to have the essentials. One of the essentials, the Manscaped 4th Generation Performance Package. You got to be ready for whatever's in your daily schedule. The perfect package for your package has the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. You got to go for the valedictorian of ball trimming and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com and using the code THISIS. You'll get 20% off and free shipping. So hopefully you're a long-term listener. You've heard a lot about Manscaped, the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker Ear and Nose Hair Trimmer, the Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant, the Crop Reviver Toner. Two free gifts come in the Performance Package 4.0, the Boxer Briefs, the Shed Travel Bag. I was hanging out with friends of mine who are married this weekend, married to each other, I mean, and the wife said that she has never felt softer boxer briefs on her husband than the Manscaped boxer briefs. So I'm simply suggesting soft boxer briefs mean maybe somebody wants to touch your boxer briefs. So the Manscaped ones, they're in the Performance Package 4.0. I would highly recommend it. And you can also, everything that's inside your Manscaped boxer briefs, you can have them trimmed up real well with the Performance Package 4.0. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THISIS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code THISIS at manscaped.com. This year, graduate with a degree in clean balls from Manscaped. All right, we'll move on to what we didn't like from this week's show. And I'll kick it over to Nate to tell us your delete pick from this week.
Okay. So they do this pretty successful segment where Bryan Danielson's going to do his interview. Kenny Omega comes out with Don Callis. You know, tremendous promo from Callis. He's getting all the heat in the world. Bryan Danielson goes right back at him, you know, makes all the good points. Hey, you know, maybe you're not the best bow machine. You know, you're hiding behind this guy who talks for you. You're hanging out with these annoying goofballs. Maybe you lost your confidence. No, I don't think it's that. Maybe you lost a step. I don't think it's that. Maybe you lost your balls. Manscaped plug goes there, I guess. So Bryan Danielson challenges him to this match. Says, how about it? Bryan Danielson versus Kenny Omega. Determine who is really the best. And Kenny milks it. And the crowd's waiting on tenterhooks. And Kenny does the big yes. And the crowd, monster pop, loses their minds. And then they just kind of look at each other for a while. They drop their microphones. They, you know, they jaw a little bit. Not like a ton of intensity coming across. And the segment just kind of sits there. And then we go to ad break. And then we come back from the ad break. And there's just a graphic that's like, hey, that match is going to be next week. How do you not have Kenny Omega say, yes, and let's do it next week in Queens on Dynamite? And fucking underline that 16 times and get a second giant pop from the crowd, half of whom, if not more, are going to be at the next week's show too. That... I was perplexed by this. I thought I was unmoored in reality. I could not believe they let that very hot segment have a fart of a ending and then announce the match in a graphic with like Tony Schiavone saying, hey, here's what's on the card. Or it was probably Excalibur at 2.0 speed saying, hey, here's what's on the card next week at Arthur Ashe Stadium, Dynamite. It torments me how you don't have Kenny Omega get another giant fucking pop out of that. And, you know, for the viewers at home, maybe the viewers at home see that segment, they go, oh, okay, Bryan Danielson's done. I can change the channel now. No, so you fucking tell them it's next week before the ad. Is there any justification for that? I don't get it at all.
No. And it's something that... it's not just like this title card that, I mean, should have been like, and Kenny should be like, all right, we'll do the match, but we're doing this next week. I don't want you to like this. You want to have this match so badly. We're doing it next week. It's my terms. Like just a very easy tagline to do this. But I mean, they basically had to go on commentary several times because everyone was confused about the fact that Grand Slam Rampage was 2 hours long. Like they randomly said that. Like it was not built up or something. It was like an aside on commentary. And it's something that it's not that they don't tell people what's coming up, is that they go about telling these things in either the most vaguest terms or they do it after the fact when you could have had the perfect capper. And we saw both of that happen here tonight. And it's something that like, why it like the fair assumption was going to be like next week in front of the biggest crowd in AEW history, we're doing the best in the world. We're doing the best bout machine versus the American Dragon. We're going to do this and see what's going to go. That's like, it's just simple stuff that like it's literally not checking your work about these sort of things. And that's what kind of drives me nuts about it. Cause it wasn't just this, it was the four hours from Arthur Ashe next week. Like they do not until they had a title card during that
Tony offhandedly, I think announced Britt Baker versus Ruby Soho for next week. They didn't have a graphic for that or anything. It's just like Tony happened to mention in passing on commentary, which left everybody going, wait, was that announced? Is that happening? So, yeah, it's, I don't know. I do get it sometimes when it's like, oh, you know, these people did a promo battle and we're going to announce the match later in the show. So we don't just want to have an awkward authority figure angle or something like that. I can understand that. But when you've got both people in the ring agreeing to the match, you know, it's right there. It's a layup to say, here's when the match is going to happen. It's a dream match that everyone has wanted to see for years, et cetera. you know, put a big fucking red circle around it.
Yeah, especially because, you know, you've been doing big numbers on your TV. You need that to keep going. You want people to keep tuning in. This is not anything you need people to buy the pay-per-view or make them wait around for 3 weeks. It's literally the next time you're on this channel on this day at this time, you're going to present this match to the fans. So, yeah, seems like a very easy thing and a very weird thing to fuck up. But it's funny, a promotion that does so many big things so well, there are just these little things that they trip over their dick on, and it's hard to understand.
Yeah, and I guess I prefer it that way. That is better, you know.
Oh, sure, sure.
Meltzer would talk about Vince's like obsession with quality control, like Mike was talking about checking your work and making sure those like basic things are never dropped or missed or whatever. And this just, I guess, isn't a super orthodox, you know, have to do everything by the black letter rule book every single time promotion. It's more freewheeling and lives and dies in the moment. And I guess I would prefer that kind of wrestling promotion where it's not so stuffy with the things you have to do every single time. But it's kind of like with last week where they cut the song short and then had to fill time at the end because they fucked up the timing. It's like you had, it was all perfect and you just didn't have the state of mind to let it play out properly. Like you've got the guys in the ring, they've agreed to the match. Let them say when the match is going to be. It's right there. It's the next thing out of their mouth at any imagined conversation between these guys, that would be the next thing you say.
I would simply suggest they should do the big things and the small things correctly. That's my suggestion to Tony Khan.
You're going out on a little bit of a limb there.
All right, Mike, what was your delete pick from this week's episode?
Yeah, so Layla Hirsch versus Jade Cargill wasn't really good at all. And it's something that with Jade Cargill over like the last month or so, it became kind of like a topic that at least like I feel like Aaron, we talked about this and we might have talked about this on some program, but they really were being very deliberate and careful with her. And it was for very good reason as it was on full display in this match. And it's something that they've already are starting to go, Jade is eventually going to come for Britt Baker's Women's World Championship. They made sure in the road to include that she's ranked in the top five. And she, all like the little things that like Jade Cargill comes off like a star every single time. Well, like the act is good. Smart Mark Sterling provides the other element that helps you, the hashtag J brand go to the next level. It just was like this match, like it just was something that was not good. And it was something that seeing how they really have been careful with Jade since coming in, it really make a couple things clear about where she is. And I mean, Layla was crazy over in her hometown and that was good. And we got to see the moonsault out of her. It just was something that this match kind of exposed Jade Cargill, and it's something that I would have, they didn't have to have this match to like expose, but like they did, like that's the thing about like this is like you did not need to have it like be this kind of match. You didn't need to have it this way, but instead it just, and I might be out on a limb on this, I just thought that when I saw this match I was like, that's not how I would really prepare a young star right there. And that was like my big takeaway of that.
Yeah, I didn't really. I mean, I guess I just come in with the expectation that, you know, Layla Hirsch is a good wrestler. But as we discussed the other week, like we saw her in Japan when she was like pretty green in stardom. And that was like 2 years ago. And it, you know, it's only been the pandemic since then. So she's just been doing the matches that she's had in AEW are the experience. We've seen all the matches that she's had since that time, basically, is what I'm saying. So you've got her, and then you've got Jade, who's, you know, also basically fresh out of training. So Layla's like the veteran in this context. I guess this didn't like violate my expectations in terms of what I thought it would look like. And there were some little bits that I enjoyed. Layla was getting good reactions. I thought the dive on Mark Sterling was some good babyface stuff. There was one, I don't know what the hold was. Layla had her in, you know, a chin lock or a full Nelson or something. And I thought Jade did a nice, like, takeover where she drops down and threw her over her shoulder with just like a, and I was like, oh, that was like a traditional wrestling move from Jade Cargill. That was kind of impressive. So, yeah, I mean, it was fine.
My problem with it is not that Jade isn't very good, which I think is true. But a problem that I have with it is that you know, I'll never get over this thing that they said about how they didn't have any women who were ready to be on TV. I will just, that will live inside my brain for the rest of my life. And now they have like a ton of women who are really good. And instead they give us this match where poor Layla Hirsch is just put in an awful position. And frankly, Jade Cargill is put in an awful position where Jade really deserves to have someone who can lead her through her first extended match on TV, and she doesn't get that. And you know, there were times where you could see Jade get lost, and Layla was like, she did take control, but it kind of took her a second to do it, because I'm sure that's not something that she's used to. There was a spot where I think they ended up doing it into a German suplex, but before that, Jade was just kind of staring at Layla like, fuck, you know, what do I do next? And Layla kind of just hesitates, then she walks over to her and grabs her and then just like makes it all happen. So that's really more my issue with it, is there are people you could have put her in there with who could have led her into a good match, because they have a lot of them, a lot of really good people, and they didn't do it. I don't have a problem with, look, Jade maybe is not going to be good. I don't know.
Sure.
But she's a star, so I don't really care if she's good. And so sometimes you just let somebody like that try to, you know, Bill Goldberg, sometimes you just try to let people like that get over on being over, and that's the end of it. And that's fine, but let people help her.
Yeah, like that's the overall thing, is like that they've been very careful with her beforehand. I mean, like, she was her role in the match with Shaq was excellent because they like let her through this here. This was something that was like, you let her kind of like do the sort of thing, and it just did not come off this way. And it's something that I've kind of started to notice a little bit more on Dark and Elevation as well with her, that like the kid gloves are off and it does not seem, and I don't say that to be like demeaning. It just seems like that they aren't like guiding her as much as you would think, considering how she was treated early on.
Yeah, and I think you said what I was thinking much better than I attempted to articulate. But I think in that I have decoded one of your issues with one of the members of the roster. I totally agree, because there was that line about, oh, you know, we need to get all these women TV ready before we can really start investing in the women's division. We just don't have, there's not any women in the world that we can, you know, bring in until we, you know, spend all this time building our roster from scratch, and then we can have women's division that's deserving of, you know, more than one segment per show, which still hasn't happened. So I figured out the person who put the finest point on that, who most explicitly said that, was of course Serena Deeb, who was like, oh yeah, no, we you know, AEW, we're getting the division going, and now we're, you know, we've added all these women. I'm there now. I can work with these young girls, and I can get them up to being TV ready. So I figured out why you have a grudge against Serena Deeb, is because she's the one who most explicitly said that bullshit point.
She did say that explicitly, and I'm sure that somewhere in the back of my mind I hold that against her, but I do just think she's not very good at wrestling. But, like, Serena Deeb! Now, I don't know... who the fuck is the NWA champion? I can't keep up with that. Don't have any interest.
Is Camille?
In
I think
up
it's
it.
Camille. Is Camille?
It is the Brickhouse Camille.
Sure.
Correct.
Sounds great. Serena Deeb, why can't she be in this match with Jade?
Her knee's gone. She's back on the DL.
Oh, so I don't have to watch her wrestle anymore? That's good. Emi Sakura would have been a good person to be in this match with Jade. Hell, I mean, I don't really want to do this match yet, because to me, this is a money match later, but Jamie Hayter, it's a good person to be in this match with Jade.
Hey, remember the previous longtime women's champion who
Yeah, buddy.
Has not been on TV. Now gets her matches cut from dark and is approaching 50 wins in this promotion. But you can't make that a little 2-week story on television that Hikaru Shida is going for a 50th win and she's up against fucking Jade Cargill or whatever.
Right. So there's a lot of people that they could have put into this role who would have been able to do a better job of helping Jade Cargill through the match. I do feel like, you know, I don't know.
No, but, you know, because Britt Baker got over on her personality and charisma. Because that happened, it's a well-booked division.
Yeah, a lot of people think that, Nate. A lot of people
I'm aware.
It's fucking infuriating. But a lot of people think that, for sure. I already deleted, so I'm going to go into the listener delete. Listener, I am the table. Building on our point, you kind of mentioned this, Nate. No build for Ruby and Britt tonight. So we get this women's match. We did get the other women's angle, kind of, with the Dark Order thing, the Bunny and Anna Jay thing that's going on. But your women's title match, even fucking Britt Baker can't get a build on this episode of Dynamite. While we get fucking Matt Hardy pre-tapes, but we can't get anything for Britt and Ruby.
Yeah, which...
And Ruby's a huge star.
Yeah, it is. You know, of all their big debuts, they had to make sure every single one of them was on this show except for Ruby. You know, and would not be a complaint, except that the match is just next week now. And it just came out of the blue.
Right.
If the match was, even if the match was on fucking Rampage next week, which if that were the case, then I could at least be like, oh, they're gonna do an angle on Dynamite to really set up that match the way that they've been doing like the Fuego and Miro angle here. But no, it's just next week immediately.
Usually, if Britt Baker is involved in a story, you can bet that it's gonna get a lot of attention. But if you want to bet on anything else, anything sports wise, you got to go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code ELITE. With over $500,000 in contest prize money up for grabs, the NFL is back in action, and so is winning season at MyBookie. You head over to MyBookie.ag. They got a variety of boosts and free bets. Get in on the fan favorite $100,000 super contest. It only costs $10 to enter. Every week, you pick 5 games against the spread. Each win gets you a point. Each point gets you closer to the grand prize. It's a, you know, competition. How many can you get right against the spread? $10 total. 5 games each week. In order to get started, head over to mybookie.ag, make your first deposit, and use the promo code ELITE, and you will instantly receive double your deposit. That's double your money to double your winnings with your first ever deposit using the promo code ELITE. I know I took advantage of that free money last week with the NFL game that somebody just had to score for you to win. Hey, somebody scored. We all won. And I recommend that you head over there and use the promo code ELITE and double your deposit. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right, running down the stuff we haven't talked about. We vaguely mentioned this. I'm kind of surprised it didn't come up at all. The show kicked off with Adam Cole versus Frankie Kazarian. Well, it really kicked off with CM Punk coming out to be on commentary. He dove into the crowd, ran around to everybody. Jim Ross was jealous. And I thought, oh, this is a pretty nice pop. You know, I was starting to wonder if those were diminishing, but he got a good reaction here. But then Adam Cole came out and got an insane reaction for his match with Frankie Kazarian, which he won with the last shot, what I'm told his running knee is called. And then he cut a promo afterward challenging the Jurassic Express and Christian.
Yeah, CM Punk, very good at commentary. I mean, you know, said as much in his pipe bomb promo. I'm the best. I'm even the best at commentary. And, you know, he exposes all of the other wrestlers turned commentators immediately, right? Like, he's out here and you're like, oh, yeah, no. Like, you know, Paul White's out there doing his best. You know, fucking Mark Henry, not really getting a lot of spots in, but he's out there. You know, Chris Jericho, usually unbearable. CM Punk, like, oh no, this is, if he was added to any of these shows, would be the second best announcer on any of them, and maybe approaching the first at times. So yeah, but fucking very nice to have him on commentary.
Then we got a video hyping up a match for Rampage, which will be a tag title match, Lucha Bros versus The Butcher and The Blade.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, like how quickly they went straight from Butcher returning to Butcher getting a tag title shot. But I think that's a strong first defense for Lucha Brothers. They played up the fact that last year they were all part of Eddie Kingston's family. They just kind of called it like family, like didn't really have an official name. And I thought that that's pretty effective. And I think that's a strong tag team title match just to have on pretty much no notice on Friday.
Then we had Fuego del Sol and Sammy Guevara backstage with Tony Schiavone. And Fuego's got a new Hyundai, and he's putting on the line to get a rematch with Miro on Rampage.
On the point of like
Hyundai, the circle Hyundai, and I think.
Hyundai.
I think
it's Hyundai. I drive a Hyundai, so I hope it's Hyundai. the inner circle, like, they're kind of just like friends of convenience now. They're not, oh, you know, we have to have all these guys together for every single segment. You know, Santana and Ortiz for a minute there were like just hanging out with Conan more, and now Sammy's basically like, no, I'm going to hang out with my best friend Fuego, which I think is a positive step for all those guys to get them a little more established in each of their own lanes, and not have this all come back to, oh, it has to be Inner Circle and Stable Wars or whatever.
Next up, we had MJF out to the ring. He does a bit where he's talking to Brian Pillman Sr., who he suggests is in hell. Brian Pillman Jr. comes out to hit him with a chair. Wardlow stops him. We get a low bridge from Brian Pillman Jr. that gets Wardlow out of the ring, and Pillman gets to celebrate a little in the ring. Next up, we had Brian Pillman Jr. again, but he's in a sit-down with Jim Ross. Ross says Pillman was humiliated last week, so he has to kick MJF's ass. Pillman gets a nice little promo, I thought, where he basically says MJF and he are not the same. MJF hasn't stepped in a ring with someone like him. I thought he showed a good fire here in this promo.
Yeah, I still like his character work. He's doing something different than basically every other babyface, and I think pretty effective at it. This was weird tonally coming immediately after his, like, hot babyface chair save or whatever. It's like, oh, now we're going to see him doing a reserve sit down interview or whatever. And he talked about, oh, you know, I let my family down because MJF got away with saying those things in Cincinnati last week. And then it's like, oh, you just did that again because you came to the ring and were celebrating with your chair and failed to actually get any shots in on MJF once again. So that was funny. Also want to debut the new nickname for him, which is the Osaka Obachan. Brian Pillman Jr.
Yes, I did like that. Okay, then we had Christian and Jurassic Express backstage with Alex Marvez. Jungle Boy says, you know, he doesn't get the whole Adam Cole thing. He has better friends than Adam Cole. He has better hair than Adam Cole. Christian cuts him off, says, I don't know, he has pretty good friends. They use their VP status to drag him out of developmental, and he's already used to losing Wednesday Night Wars, so let's make him lose again on Friday.
Christian been reading MRT's timeline.
Did you guys think this was
probably
like
probably where they saw the Suzuki incident for the first time?
That's true. You guys think that this is continuing to foreshadow a Christian Jungle Boy split at some point, the way he cut him off in this promo?
You know, I had kind of forgotten that or put it on the back burner, but now that you mention it, he does just like, hey man, I don't mean to interrupt you, but just fully interrupts him and takes the entire promo, which we saw in the Dark Order segment, which was like clearly supposed to be a heel thing or something from Evil Uno. So yeah, I think there's something to that.
FTR and took on Dante Martin and Matt Sydal. FTR hair got the pin. He pinned Dante after they hit him with the big rig.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Probably, I think, the best match on the show, but also it was taking FTR out of their affectations and putting them in their best matches they could possibly have, which are these kind of matches. And, you know, there were some moments that were a little bit shaky, but I thought this was a whole lot of fun. And I thought that Dante Martin, each time he gets time on TV, just blows everyone away. The crowd goes nuts. Like, this is something that's really remarkable to see over the last few months, like the elevation of Dante Martin.
Very annoyed that Punk and Jim Ross both have been saying on commentary that FTR is the best tag team in the world, because they're not. They were tag champions two title reigns ago. They got beat by the Young Bucks, who got beat by the Lucha Brothers, who are the best tag team in the universe, which is larger than the world. So that's annoying to me.
It's honestly surprising that Punk understands that, like, Darby is really good, because he's kind of the same type of dumbass that Jim Ross is when it comes to wrestling in a lot of ways.
He also seems to like the Young Bucks. So I don't know.
Well, he knows what's over. I mean, he's a lot like Chris Jericho in that way, right? Like, if something's over, he's going to be in on it. But
Jericho's
is
probably a better comparison.
But his wrestling sensibilities are much closer to, like, FTR, I think, than the Young Bucks.
Yeah.
Then we had a pre-tape for Lance Archer and Minoru Suzuki. Archer says it was unfair what happened in Cincinnati. That's going to change because now they're going to be in New York City. And, you know, he plays up on the fact that he's a member of Suzuki-Gun. He's tagged with Minoru Suzuki before, and Suzuki closes it out with Suzuki-Gun, Ichiban.
So this was definitely taped before the Suzuki incident became a meme that AEW then, you know, incorporated that fanon into their canon, which stuck out like a sore thumb to me. It's like, oh, they made a lot of hay. CM Punk was talking about it. They're mad about the music, and the promo has no mention of the music whatsoever.
This is the determinative evidence, the dispositive evidence, that this was not intentional. No one intended for that to happen. It was just a shittily timed television show, and this promo proves it.
Absolutely.
Right, yeah. And I mean, like, the fact that y'all did see Emi Sakura FaceTimed Minoru Suzuki about it. Minoru Suzuki's like, I have no idea what's going on here.
See, that's bad, like, form by Emi, I think. She's blowing up the angle.
Well, yeah, but it's also really funny. And I'll take the fact that it's really funny over blowing up the angle any time of the day.
If it was my promotion and somebody disrespected kayfabe like that on the timeline, you know, they'd have words with me.
The Bill Watts of 2021, Nate's promotion.
On that, do I want to complain about the Big E thing or do I not?
That's up to you, brother.
I don't. Okay.
Okay. Hearing no complaint, I will carry on. Malachi Black, we talked about that and his brawl with Cody. We got a bunny pre-tape. She wouldn't have attacked Anna Jay if Anna Jay would have minded her own business, and that led into this Dark Order backstage thing. We find out Anna Jay is going to face Bunny on Rampage on Friday. Alex Reynolds is mad that Uno appears to be taking over Anna's interview time. We get more dissension in the Dark Order. I just want to say that this segment passed the Britdale test because it's a women's segment that did not reference Britt Baker, but it does not pass the Bechdel test because because it ended
it
up
it was
being,
mostly men talking.
Yes, women only talking about men. Thank you. Okay.
This is, yeah, now we've got a two-pronged test. This is powerful stuff.
Yes, it's no stopwatch, but it is powerful. Then we have the Dan Lambert American Top Team / Men of the Year segment with Jericho that we talked about. That's also going to lead to a match on Rampage with Jericho and Hager versus the Men of the Year. And how has this not come up yet? We got a Gun Club pre-tape where they said no one has been more disrespected than the Gun Club, and they pointed out that in every iteration of their teams, they are undefeated, and that's why they had to strike at Paul White, because of the respect that they're not getting in this promotion.
Yeah, no, they did the good thing that was an option about turning these guys' heels, which is make it about their winning streak. But yeah, that it didn't come up. It was not mentioned at all since it happened, as far as I know. I guess maybe I was at All Out, so maybe they could have mentioned it during All Out on the commentary or something, but was not on the television at all last week. So I had pretty much forgotten the Gun Club existed. So, hey, if you have to do the turn, this was a good way to further the turn and give them a little bit of you know, solid ground where maybe these guys can start to make something of themselves.
And I have to say, billing is annoying Suns. Good heel act. I'm still disappointed about Austin Gunn, but solid heel act. They did not bring up the fact that Austin Gunn was beat by Anthony Ogogo. So it's only in team combinations they are undefeated. Singles matches is another story.
Yeah, this is a team thing. This is a family thing. Then they had Jade versus Leila Hirsch. Jade won with Jaded. And then Andrade.
Did I sing that in my living room? I did.
I just sang it in my podcast room on this podcast. Andrade got a pre-tape. Did we learn that the tablet guy's name is Jose? Was this the first revelation of that?
Did not listen to EE World Tour with me and Outgan this week.
I did not. Yeah. I apologize. Did you talk about him being called Jose?
We did. It came up on Rampage that he was revealed to be named Jose, and discussed him having a taser.
Yes.
But yeah, this was they did some good, I guess not retconning, but some good explaining of why Andrade turned on Chavo after Chavo helped him cheat to win, when it doesn't seem like that should be a moral issue for Andrade or whatever. So a pretty good pre-tape. I feel like the subtitles are unnecessary. This Andrade was very easy to understand in this promo. It's, you know, it's a fine line because at some point it's a little condescending, right? When you have the subtitles there and they're not necessary. But on this one, I had no trouble understanding them whatsoever.
I agree. But I thought it was really good. And in the, you know, being there in the building, and I guess that's why I also didn't know his name was Jose. I don't know if that was discussed on commentary or something. I didn't get it. But being in the building, I was confused about whether it was a face turn, which didn't make a lot of sense to me. And so this was a nice explanation of, no, it's just that I'm the one in charge. And so I don't want anyone else giving orders other than me. So that made sense. Andrade, this is the best he's looked, the best energy.
Confidence.
I mean, that's all true. But I don't know. This is the best Andrade we've had in the promotion, period. This is the most excited I've been about Andrade since he showed up in the promotion. It's good.
Low bar, but yes.
Very low bar. But man, that match on Rampage was excellent. And, you know, showed us that he's got something to give. And then this, it's like, okay, it's coming together for Andrade. He's overcoming the political hit. And I'm glad to see it. Taz and Hook confronted Punk at commentary. Punk tries to get in Hook's face. Hobbs attacks him from behind. Hobbs ends up putting Punk through the table. And we were told that this will lead to Punk and Hobbs on next week's Rampage, which I was pretty surprised by to see a new CM Punk match this soon.
Those shows are loaded up, man.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Which is wild. I mean, they're already sold out for those, you know, so
are they sold out in Queens? I thought there were still scattered seats.
I think there's still scattered ones, but
yeah,
well, I mean
you know,
I don't know if you needed to announce all this to fill up scattered seats.
Yeah, it's sold more than enough,
right? Yeah, no, in the fact that I was expecting we get like Punk maybe once a month or so, kind of like how Jericho, without like stuff that's like immediately leading up to a storyline, like Jericho will do segments and stuff, but he does not wrestle as much here. But the fact that he's doing two matches in 3 weeks upon his debut is pleasantly surprising, I guess I would say.
Yeah, I'm not sure how often we want to see Punk have wrestling matches. I'll be curious to see how they do that. I'm curious to see how they do that with all these guys, you know, with Danielson, how often we see him actually wrestle for free on TV. So I'm curious. This should be fun. This is exciting, right? It's like, oh, Punk versus a guy you like didn't even know existed for most of Punk's retirement. Certainly the last time Punk was wrestling. So that's like, cool. That's fun to see.
No, it's very cool that it's Powerhouse Hobbs in this spot, mostly, you know. because, you know, matches, whatever. I can take or leave matches. But the potential to build Powerhouse Hobbs into like a real star when he, like you said, is basically come out of nowhere on the national stage, is pretty cool. So it's very kind of an exciting match for that reason.
Yeah, at this point, maybe the great breakout star of the pandemic era.
Could be, yeah. He was fucking an enhancement guy going into the pandemic, yeah.
We got the Sean Spears pre-tape. This appeared on Road 2. They aired it here. He talked about giving Darby his first loss in AEW. He's going to beat him again. This is the other thing I thought about talking about in my Elite. This was something that absolutely incensed me when it happened. I think I bitched about it for, I don't know, 3 to 5 months on this very program after it happened. Why the fuck did Sean Spears pin Darby Allin? And they smartly, you know, if you're going to do it, which you probably shouldn't have, but if you're going to do it, at least they have brought it back up here so that Darby has the opportunity to erase it by getting his win back. And I was also, you know, fearful that they would do something weird here. And they didn't. They just had Darby come out and beat Sean Spears with a coffin drop. And then after the match, they did what they wanted to do as far as angles-wise. You got FTR in the ring. They brawled with Sting and Darby. Tully got involved. During the match, Spears had wiped Darby's face paint off. That was a big thing in the build to this about Darby being a weirdo. It was a Chad versus Virgin match. And then they also they did the same thing to Sting. They wiped his face paint off after the match, setting up a match with FTR and Darby and Sting.
Was I the only one? Oh, go ahead, Nate.
I was just going to say, I think I deleted this program last week because I don't care about the Tully thing. I don't care about Sean Spears. But they did a good job of Spears setting up the whole face paint thing in the Road 2 or whatever, and then using the wiping off the face paint for heat on Darby and then on Sting. I really think escalated things nicely and put some heat on the angle.
Yeah, no, I thought this was all super effective. I thought the match was solid. Like they had the kind of match that you would want to see out of these two guys, really, like, brawly, you know, light on plunder, but it was had in the wrist. Like, the bump that Darby took in on the apron, like, doing, like, the full backflip, landing on his head, just getting his legs kicked out of him, was insane. And it shows you my mental state that I saw Road 2. I know that the whole thing that Sean Spears made about the face paint, the second I saw him grab a ball of water and a towel, I was like, oh, is he going to waterboard Darby Allin on national television? That was where my brain immediately jumped to with that. But instead, we got this storyline instead.
The 9/11 celebration spot right here live on Dynamite. But no, it did not come to fruition. Then we had a Bryan Danielson pre-tape talking about Omega. Not sure why we did a pre-tape right into an in-ring interview. Just that seems like a weird choice. When he didn't say anything special in the pre-tape. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird. They did the same thing with Brian Pillman Jr. Just had the guy's pre-tape and in-ring segment back-to-back.
Yeah, he could have just said that in the ring. But on both of those cases, they could have just said it in the ring.
Or just flip the pre-tapes and do them in a little bit of a different order. It just seems, I don't know. You don't go, I just saw this guy. Now he's backstage? I don't know.
Right. Or if, like, with Danielson, it's like, oh, you wanted to do this pre-tape in the first 30 minutes of the show just so people would see him. Like, sure, I would understand that. But yeah, this is very weird. But we talked about this. A lot of genitals talk. We had Jericho do the P word. Can we even say the P word on this podcast? Couldn't believe they said that on TNT.
You have said it on the podcast before. I think you said I might get canceled for this. But
oh yeah.
I mean, before they fucked up the match announcement, I was going to delete all the swearing on this show. I was going to go Mike Spears mode and say too many dang S words.
There were too many cusses on this show. I agree with that.
This was not a family.
You're making all of them less effective. Space them out. Learn to work, kid.
That's right. Grab a hold.
It was not a family product tonight.
It wasn't.
Between this, the attempted waterboarding, not a family product, especially like the last half hour.
And, you know, Bryan Danielson said that he thought Kenny Omega had lost his balls, you know. So not only did we have a lot of cussing, but a lot of gendered insults, which you really don't need. And probably the thing that offends me most, I mean, a reference to balls without dropping our manscaped.com code. This is for 20% off plus free shipping. Okay. There was a Miro pre-tape. He says everyone he's forgiven has been smart enough to not stick around. So why are you calling me out? He tells Fuego he's going to bash his brain, then bash his car.
He's just got to like pick up Fuego and throw him through the windshield, right? He has to combine two and one if we're going to be doing the Street Fighter car wreck bonus stage.
Matt Hardy pre-tape. He wants to shave Orange Cassidy's hair. And then we got Mox and Eddie versus 2.0. Mox pinned Parker after a combo lariat half and half. After the match, Suzuki's music hits. He comes out, does the Kaze ni Nare. The crowd really doesn't get that much into it. It was kind of a bummer in the end. They had a big brawl.
Yeah, a little reality check as far as what percentage of people in the buildings are on Twitter actively and, you know to do these things and know it's a big deal now about the music. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, I'm not going to rant about that. Who cares? That was Dynamite this week. If you like our show, head on over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. We got three tiers. The big difference, or I don't know, the most important one to subscribe, obviously, is the one that costs the most money. No, the most important one, the $5 tier, you get all our audio. The kicker to the $8 tier is you get our live shows on Wednesday nights and the audio and the YouTube replays, which I used last week when I was not on the show. On my drive home from Cincinnati, I listened to the YouTube replay before it was posted up on our podcast feed. So that's a big help, at least it was to me. We cover everything that AEW does. We cover Dark and preview Dynamite on AEW Light. We review BTE on AEW Light. We review Rampage on EE World Tour, which we do on the weekends. We do this show about Dynamite, obviously. We do instant reactions to all the pay-per-views. We had an all-out retrospective and preview that's available on the Patreon, and an instant reaction show that we did. We do other bonus shows. This is CM Punk was a big one that we did last month. I anticipate a follow-up, not to that person, but a different person that maybe has debuted in AEW. Perhaps you'll see something like that in the near future. And of course, we have the Discord where we have a lot of fun chatting about all the shows, among other things. So sign up, join the Discord. Have fun. I owe some people some stickers, which I have not made it out to the post office. But if you've asked me for a sticker and given me your address, it will go out of the mail to you ASAP.
If you if you're in the Chicago area and you need some, there are some in the men's restroom at Emporium in Logan Square. So you can just peel them off the walls / stalls there.
Don't know how that happened, frankly.
Well, one of them was Oatgam for sure.
No clue. No clue whatsoever.
No. Rampage this week, which they will have finished taping by now. I don't know if that makes sense or not. The tag titles, Butcher and Blade versus Lucha Bros, TNT title, Miro versus Fuego, Anna Jay versus Bunny. I just looked on the thing, and apparently I need to find a guest for World Tour this weekend. So me and somebody will be talking about that episode of Rampage this weekend, but I don't know who that's going to be because I just realized I have to do it. Next week on Dynamite, I think this is all on this show. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Cody Rhodes versus Malakai Black, MJF versus Brian Pillman Jr., Lance Archer and Minoru Suzuki versus Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston, Kenny Omega versus Brian Danielson in a non-title match.
Thank you. I was going to say non-title match. Be very clear about that.
The women's title match, Britt Baker versus Ruby Soho, FTR versus Sting and Darby, and a CM Punk interview.
Yeah, that's usually about, this is the first time in a while they have had all six matches for Dynamite announced before the end of the previous Dynamite.
Man, but these are big matches. I don't know. I guess they're not going to do any or very few talking segments or vignettes whatnot.
Yeah, those were all on this week.
Mm-hmm.
I guess so. Yeah, there weren't very many matches on this show.
It'll be Grand Slam time, baby. You look at these matches and there's only a few of them that you could feel like, okay, we get short shrift if we had talking segments. Like, I guess the question I want to ask y'all here, because I think this is a good time to do it. Omega versus Danielson, 20-minute time limit draw or fuck finish? Because I don't think we're going to be getting a clean finish one way or the other the first time out.
I think Danielson should just beat him.
This from the guy who hates when champions get pinned and don't lose the title.
I do hate that, and I think it'll be weird because Omega just did a story where he lost a match not for the AEW World title and then retained the title later. But my point is this, from a storyline perspective, Omega's been doing this whole thing where he's not the best bout machine. He is getting by the skin of his teeth. You know, Don Callis is helping, the Good Brothers are helping, etc. He has shown that he's not on the level of what we expect Bryan Danielson to be. So there either has to be a fuck finish or some sort of interference, or Bryan Danielson should beat him. I don't really think there's any other story to tell.
It just occurred to me, this feels like it was the first Dynamite episode without the Good Brothers in about 9 months, maybe. So they were missed. I think Kenny Omega should just beat him. I think you have, if not the top guy from the other company, this is old school wrestling logic, if not the top guy from the other company, a top guy from the other company who just main evented their WrestleMania, who was specifically added to that match because the other guys weren't getting it done. And now he's in your company. And I think you just have your champion beat him.
That's a very strong point. And I, as a fan of old school wrestling, I cannot disagree with it. It would be impossible for me to do so.
And you know, if you want to do a little hijinks to cover, you know, you want to have a little involvement by the Good Brothers or whatever on the outside, and maybe Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy run him off, you know, so it's not like a real fuck finish, but you just protect Danielson a little bit, then I think that's fine. But, you know, I think it also would just be good to have Omega solidified a little bit and really just have him go out and have a kick-ass performance and beat a guy with this move.
I think part of it comes down to what you think the full gear title match is. Is it Omega versus Danielson, or is it Omega versus Hangman Page, or is it some other combination?
I think you go to Omega and Page next, and I think Page is still the guy to beat him. And then maybe you can, you know, Danielson said he'll worry about the belt later, so you have time to get to that, and you have other interesting matches you can have before then.
Yeah, I mean, the story of the match is literally, is are they on the same level as wrestlers? So if Danielson loses to him, I think if it's a straight up loss, I think it's hard to sell a quick turnaround for a title match for Danielson as the challenger.
I changed my mind. Well, no, I didn't. Omega should beat him, but he should specifically have him submit to the fake arm chainsaw spot.
Just bury the WWE guy?
Yeah.
I'm not against that. That's fine. I'm on board. Mike, you didn't say your thought.
Oh, I thought it should be a 20-minute time limit draw. I think they should, because I think that you don't want to give away a finish there on a show that's one way or another completely going to be sold out. Save it for full gear when you have to fill up a building that don't already have tickets spoken for.
Yeah, after their initial couple draws, they've definitely stayed away from it. So I wonder if they just don't.
Yeah.
If they continue to try to educate the crowd about draws, then I think that would be a better idea. But they've pretty much stayed away with it, so I think there might be a lot of casual people checking in for the first time that go, a draw? What? So I think they're maybe a little gun shy about it.
A draw? What is this? 2021 Stardom? Was that where you're trying to go for?
Fucking
that?
Yeah, got
that's what the that's what the casual fan would be saying.
Drag exactly. Rossi's yes. ass, King. Love it. Yeah, well, that's going to be interesting. I'm sure Mike and I will talk about that more on AW Light. Is that what it's actually called, AW Light, or is it just called Light? I'm not sure.
No.
It's called AW Light. I say yeah. I've said it now 98 times.
It's a play on AW Dark. Product. That was the original. I mean, I fucking yeah. came up with the name of the show, so you think I would know above all, but
yeah, did why you? Are you asking me?
Yes, or, yes, I came
up
with the
check the
name.
Records on that?
Yes. It's
well, do we need to go find 2 years of DMs to discover this?
Yeah, I mean, I think you will find it there.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's how we verify this, Nate.
Yeah,
I did.
All I know is I didn't come up with a name. I have not named a single thing with Everything Elite because my names are terrible.
You came up with the music.
Did I come up with Mbop as the theme music? Is that
no,
on me?
I came up with Mbop as the theme music for this. I'm talking about the theme music for Light.
Oh, yeah. I just found, like, a weird jazz song that I thought was funny.
Okay, thank you. You did previously deny that you came up with the music, by the way. So you're caught in a lie one way or the other.
I thought you...
Wow. Wow. Perry Mason over here.
Because it's formerly the music from The Starters, and I was like, we just took the music from another podcast and used it. And well, then you're both like, it wasn't me. And I'm like, well, it was one of you.
I think this happened publicly, and I found the messages where Mike proposed it. I can't remember if I ever like posted them anywhere, but I have them somewhere.
Okay. Well, that makes the most sense because Mike wouldn't have known the song from that. And so, yeah,
right. A lot of good litigation over podcast things that I'm sure the listeners will just love at the end of
yeah,
the show.
It's very important. These are such great ideas. We have to get credit for them.
Exactly. All right. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate is at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review. And if you want to support the show, head over to manscaped.com. Use the promo code ThisIsMyBookie. Use the promo code Elite. Or just sign up at patreon.com/everythingelite. For Mike, for Nate, I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week. Okay.